Welcome to the Spot On Insurance Podcast, brought to you by Insurance Licensing Services of America, ILSA. This is Ted Tavares.
And this is Arlene Tavares coming to you from beautiful Puerto Rico. Today, we'll be taking a closer look at a topic that affects every single one of us.
But before we get started, don't forget to click on the subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. And now, here's our host, Doug Foresta.
Hello and welcome to Spot On Insurance. This is your host, Doug Foresta, and with me today are Norma Essery, the CEO of Surplus Lines Stamping Office of Texas, as well as Tara Mitchell, the CIO of Surplus Stamping Line Office of Texas. Norma and Tara, welcome.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be back.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It's great to have you. And I know today we're going to talk about, you know, lessons from takeaways from the hurricane. Norma, I know that you wrote an editorial about this. And where I thought we could start is, you know, Norma, in the editorial, you talked about how there's a paradigm shift that's going to be emerging over the next months and years. Can you just explain to our listeners a little bit of what that paradigm shift is?
Certainly. It was really interesting, you know, as we watched the television and different newscasts, it became quite apparent, given the size and the growth and, you know, how it was going to hit and where it was going to hit, that there were so many different elements just roaming around. And as it struck mainland and as it continued to grow in depth of loss and just further exposure into the state, it became quite apparent that an industry fundamental change was already happening. And what I meant by that was, you know, really how we look at some of these catastrophic losses are sometimes very, dimensional from the industry perspective. But really what it began to evolve into was really showing how it really had effects in very different parameters, such as if we look at when losses happen or, you know, major events, you know, we certainly look to the, you know, government for assistance.
Right.
But in this case, it wasn't just looking at what, you know, state and local resources. And yes, we knew we would have a certain limited amount there. But it went even further where you saw groups using social media and beginning their own disaster relief funds. In fact, we saw some of those, you know, from athletes that started their own simple, from youcaring.com to, you know, GoFundMe, that began really building on how to help the affected victims. So that was one area that had an infusion of, you know, some, you know, obviously monetary funds. But the other thing that we saw was that there began fundamental changes, even in the changes in how are we going to respond to these claims? You know, most insurance companies have catastrophic teams that go out and they begin, you know, quickly trying to assess and pay out claims. But in this case, it was days and even weeks before adjusters and appraisers could even get into those particular areas just because the floodwaters had not receded. In fact, there are some cases where some of the homeowners are being told, you know, this is not just an evacuation, it's a mandatory evacuation. And in fact, we're actually even closing off this neighborhood entirely. It is a no-zone area. So, you know, with that being said, just the use of the technology part became even more important. A third area that I thought was just amazing, yes, we've had the internet for some time. We've talked about social media. But one of the things that I saw personally, and I saw it from, you know, friends who were down in the Houston area, were their use of their drones. The drones became even greater cameras and videos that were so well done that you felt like you were actually living in the midst of the storm itself.
What do you see as the biggest gaps that exist when it comes to these extreme weather events, like, you know, as of this recording, you know, Harvey, Irma, now Maria, as we talk?
I think what we're going to see is that, you know, we've known about some of these gaps in terms of, you know, policy disparities, but it really pointed to some additional areas that while we've recognized the need for mitigation standards, they've become even more paramount now. And in terms of mitigation standards, you know, we've seen countless prevention mechanisms, such as, you know, having certain codes and requirements and building standards. Now those will become even more important. If you look at just the maps, you know, a lot of these homes that you know, and businesses that were flooded weren't even in the flood zone area. You know, we think of a 100-year storm as being, you know, never happening.
Right.
But in reality, it's based on probability, not history. So these maps, you know, that were done from the government perspective are really completely unreliable. So you have two things going on. You have a remapping that's going to be, you know, quite enormous. But at the same time, you're going to have all these municipalities trying to really develop their coding, their permitting requirements. And the other part is, you know, what we have to think about is the population perspective. Because even when they remap and they come up with these codes, a lot of the rural areas, you know, are likely to see new development, but may still fall out of outside of the mapping. The other area to consider is, you know, education. Yes, we all know that we need to do a better job in speaking, but the industry as a whole has a very difficult nomenclature. So for the typical insured to understand what their coverage is or what they don't have, you know, it becomes a, you know, sometimes the only time they know what they have is when they have a loss.
Right. Then all of a sudden you find out, oh man, what I thought was covered isn't actually covered because I didn't understand what I had or didn't have, right?
You got it. You got it. And when they realize what they could have or should have bought, then it becomes a whole nother, you know, buying decision. For instance, in our particular market, you know, in the service lines market, it's the non-standard market. So if you use the words non-standard, what does that really mean to the typical consumer? It means, oh, it's probably not, you know, it's probably not the best, you know, product to buy. It's, you know, it's non-standard. It's not admitted. You know, it's probably not the. However, if you look at the surplus lines market, at the end of the day, it comes down to innovative and specialty insurance products. And this side of the marketplace is where the capacity lies for a lot of these homeowners. The industry as a whole is really still struggling to communicate better to legislators and politicians to be able to make that piece known and understood. And, you know, and we're still, I think now we're probably at a place where it will make sense what the difference really is from an admitted versus a non-admitted insurance policy and the value it brings to the consumer.
Yeah. Stepping out a second, did we talk about the mitigation piece of it?
You know, on the mitigation part, keep in mind that the remapping is going to really take some major incentives. It's going to be a long project, and it may take some time before we even understand where that mapping may or may not affect other terrains and locations and regions.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I had, I was listening to a meteorologist talking about what you talked about, that 100 year, you know, the 100 year events, and how it's, unfortunately now it's misleading because we're seeing more extreme weather events, so that people are like, well, you know, it's a 100 year event, but the reality is that we might live through, in an average lifespan, we might now be living through several 100 year lifetime events, I believe, right? That's my understanding.
That's correct. Katrina was a 500 year, and Harvey, they're saying, was a 1,000 year event, which really is really about historical, or it's based on probability, not history.
Tara, I want to turn attention to you, and I want to ask you about how Harvey affected the Texas surplus lines market.
Hey, Doug. Thanks.
Hey.
You know, we here in Austin are lucky that we didn't endure what some of our friends and family did. And some of the hardest hit cities like Houston, Beaumont, who had, I believe it was 30 inches of rain within a 24-hour period. I mean, we're talking biblical storm here, okay? And we've got some of those even smaller towns like Victoria, which is an oil town. You heard probably about gas shortages, and everyone was worried about, okay, are we going to have supply chain issues? Because, you know, Texas is such a huge oil market for the entire U.S. And one of the major things is, you know, a lot of it was hype. A lot of that was there were two or three times the amount of volume at the gas stations trying to get gas because of these mandatory evacuations, because people are, you know, panicking. And you see a lot of shortages and fallout from that. However, you know, our railroad commissioner has assured everybody that there's plenty of gas to go around. And of course, we have reserves here in Texas. So yeah. Rest assured, the rest of the U.S., that yeah. We will, you know, be able to make that happen. And yes, we're still seeing some of those price increases upwards of 50 cents a gallon from where it was prior to the storm hit. Now, the reason I mentioned some of those things is because in the surplus lines market, as you know, we have a lot of different types of property that we insure. Like Norma mentioned, this is a very small segment of the Texas marketplace. The Texas premium statewide for all insurance is about $65
billion.
Wow. And our surplus lines market is only $5 billion. Mm-hmm. So we're a very small piece of that. Now, we did do a study and we looked at, okay, since Harvey hit on that date, how much in-force premium did we have, especially in those counties which have been declared a disaster declaration by either Governor Abbott or even where FEMA is currently operating. Governor Abbott has declared this disaster declaration for 58 counties to date. And that number is growing as DPS is getting into some of these more rural areas and assessing some of that damage where the floodwaters have now started to recede almost 2 or 3 weeks later. And what we had in force at the time, we had about 20,000 surplus lines property policies. That totals $840 million in premium for our state. And 8,600 of those policies are actual commercial and residential flood policies. Now, that's good news for some of those that, you know, otherwise would have to go through the federal program, the NFIP, the National Flood Insurance Program, to procure that flood insurance. The fact that our market is now being able to assist and participate in that space has helped a little bit.
Yeah, certainly I imagine, I mean, an event like this really hits home why we, you know, why insurance is important, certainly why surplus lines is important. It's unfortunate and terrible that these things happen, but it sounds like it really makes it clear as to the need and the importance of insurance, right? And something we don't think about sometimes till, unfortunately, sometimes until it's too late.
Yeah, that's very true. One of the statistics that I read is that insured losses here in our state are projected to reach $19 billion. But when you look at the numbers that you've seen on the news, that $100 billion, $150 billion, most of that is uninsured property. So again, that's why it is important for us Texans and as a community and even now as a nation with Florida and now even this morning Puerto Rico being hit so hard by Maria, it's very important for us to come together as citizens and take care of one another.
Spot on Insurance is sponsored by ILSA, Insurance Licensing Services of America, America's premier licensing and regulatory compliance experts. To learn more about ILSA and the services they provide, visit ilsainc.com.
Norma, you're going to take this one, but you talked about, you know, in the editorial you wrote, you talked about the need to better educate government, legislative, political leaders. What does that look like? I mean, what do we need to educate them? What do we need to be saying to them?
I can't say enough that the nomenclature in this industry makes it difficult for not just consumers, but for even other industry professionals, not to mention our, you know, political leaders, to understand and comprehend. In this particular case, when Terry was talking about, you know, just the extent of loss and the number of uninsured, you know, claims that will be out there, is that had they known or had they understood that the capacity was available in the surplus lines market, it really would have made it a very attractive avenue. And one of the things that we did, and just to give you an example, was this past year, you know, was a legislative session here in Texas. And, you know, by virtue of having a young and talented staff, they put together really communication pieces that weren't in the form of volumes of white papers and
all these, huge brochures and notebooks. It was really, at the end of the day, they were quick snapshots. They were infographics that were visual, that were quick in terms of providing numbers. It was factual based. It was information that came directly from our database. It was clean. It tied it to the bills that were of importance. There was no side picking or cherry picking. It was basically just a quick snapshot that anybody could understand. And I knew that it was going to be a valuable piece when I took this one-page infographic, colored infographic at home, and I gave it to my teenage daughter, and I said, can you read this and tell me if you understand what the surplus lines market is and what we do? And she read it through, and she looked at it, and she goes, yeah. Sure. I get it, Mom. Great. I get it. And at that point, I knew we had met our objective. And from that, legislators and their staffers were asking for it because that's what they were using in their discussion pieces on those particular bills. It wasn't a volume notebook. It wasn't a white paper that was too long. It was just informational facts in a very short form. So I think that's what we have to do. The other piece that we have to do is educate our consumers on what the surplus lines market is. When people hear surplus lines, they're thinking, well, surplus product, they're thinking salvage, they're thinking anything in excess. They're not thinking this means specialty insurance.
Right.
And so this past year, we also rebranded. And even though we're still the Surplus Lines Stamping Office of Texas, we rebranded to SLTX. Because at the end of the day, Surplus Lines is really Specialty Insurance of Texas. And it's our job to make sure that whoever is going to be purchasing these policies, the consumers know that they have perhaps some better choices out there. And now, with what's happened with all of these hurricanes, I think it'll be a no-brainer to the rest of the industry that there's got to be something more than NFIP or the brunt to fall on taxpayers.
And I think if there's, if there's a silver lining to come out of, it's hard to say silver lining when, so many people's homes are destroyed. But if there is some silver lining, I mean, we can't stop these storms from happening. So the next best thing we can do is prepare for the inevitability that they will happen. And we're seeing more extreme weather. I love what you're saying about, I love that test kind of in a way of like, does this, if my daughter can understand, how old is your daughter, by the way? I didn't ask you.
She's 17.
Yeah. So if my daughter can understand this, then politicians should be able to understand it. And this will help move policy forward versus, like you said, the industry speak, which can be confusing to people if they're not familiar with it.
Quite complex.
Tara, I want to ask you about depopulation efforts and how the current state of depopulation efforts has helped or not helped these recent hurricane events. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, Doug. So what I wanted to start off with is first, let me educate some people on what depopulation efforts we're talking about here.
Sure.
There's two main programs. One that's a national program or a federal government program, the NFIP, which stands for the National Flood Insurance Program. This program has been around for a few decades now, and it is $23 billion in debt currently. That's prior to Hurricane Harvey, Irma, Maria, any of the others. And it was just reauthorized through the end of December by the president. Now, he has stated that we need to remain compassionate, we need to pay these claims, but it is coming at a price to taxpayers, to you and I and everybody else, mm-hmm. to basically bail out everyone from these storms. And at the same time, there has been some attempts and some efforts through the past congressional sessions at the federal level to try to educate those legislators on a better way to spread the risk through depopulation. And what we mean is, these private market insurers, whether they're in the standard market or in our surplus lines market, they're willing to take a piece of the pie, take some of these risks, and write them in their own programs. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you look at the last decade, we haven't had a real impactful name storm. So they, in the last couple of sessions, could have easily sold this as, hey, this is a great way to get, you know, this private market involved. And even when you look at, you know, the losses that we're going to endure from this one, I think the more participants that you have in a depopulation program, the better you can spread that risk. And when you're able to do that, then you will not end up with as many insurer insolvencies, as well as, you know, you're not having to tax the general public to be able to sustain a program that is broke and broken, as Judd Hesserling has said recently. Another piece of this is that there isn't really anything that keeps those participants in these programs from rebuilding the same structure over and over again. Mm. So you look at places that are really prone to flooding, like in Louisiana, and those structures, you know, they maybe have flooded 3 or 5 times, and we've paid to rebuild that same structure over and over again. So that's another problem that we have with this National Flood Program, is that it almost incentivizes those properties to stay where they're at, rather than finding a better way to mitigate the risk would be to, you know, relocate those properties or have those people, you know, be able to rebuild on more solid ground.
I can't be the only person to have ever had that thought. Yeah. I mean, you know, many times I think about, you know, watching on TV and someone says, well, you know, I've rebuilt this house 5 times, and if I have to rebuild another 10, you know, so be it. And I've always wondered, you know, yeah, at what point do you stop rebuilding it and say, boy, this really isn't a great place to have a house?
Yes. And, you know, I think that just needs to be a lesson learned this time around that, okay, you know, shame on us for continuing to allow that practice through this legislation that is currently on the books and kind of incentivizes that exact mentality that you're talking about. I think that we can be a lot smarter about it, and that there's just going to have to be reengineering, like Norma said, and those flood maps. We really need to take a better look at that, and we need to try to keep people out of those areas. You know, this is just going to happen more and more with the warmer waters that we have in the oceans. And that's something else that we have to think about. Another aspect of this that affects our state is Texas Windstorm Insurance Association, or TWIA. And they are there for the wind claims. Now, we have a lot of wind claims that aren't just related to hurricanes. As you know, we've got tornadoes here. We have wind and hail events all the time. So, you know, this will definitely be a big hit to their bottom line. They've had the last 10 years where it's been relatively quiet, and they've been able to rebuild their reserves, which is great. But we also know that this depopulation effort, trying to push those risks out to the private market, has excluded surplus lines insurers from the program. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't really help depopulate much, because currently there's only 15 authorized or standard market companies that have decided to export the risk from TWIA. On top of that, they have an assumptive reinsurance program, but it's really unclear how many market participants you have on that side helping to depopulate the plan. I think there's been a lot of political discussions, and even a number of studies have been conducted regarding TWIA, even as far back as 5 years ago, with a lot of recommendations to the state legislators about how we could fix TWIA, who at the time was, you know, not actuarially sound, not able to pay out on all these claims, so that the next time we had a big event like Hurricane Harvey, that it would be better funded. Now, I don't know if that's the case today. It's really unclear what those measures that were put in place, what the effects will be. But there is a provision that allows the Texas Insurance Commissioner to assess a premium surcharge to any property and casualty insurer that was writing business in our state when the event took place. So if we see that order come out, we'll have some more direction and understanding about just how much funding TWIA needs.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I want to, for both of you, and this is a question really for both of you as we close out here, which is, overall, what do you see as some possible solutions that could arise from Harvey and Irma. And again, now Maria, and, you know, that's just as of the date of this recording. I'm sure, you know, obviously we're going to be seeing more of these extreme weather events.
Well, beyond the cleanup and rebuild that we'll see across our nation is certainly the whole reauthorization of N5P. But for me, is a no-brainer. I think it makes it more apparent to all parties that the private market is going to need to be involved, as well as the surplus lines market. And the capacity is there. The innovation is there. The ability to respond quickly is there. The other part is it will also make it a lot better for these communities on the whole mitigation and reengineering. You know, I saw some particular properties in Florida that really were, you know, in the eye of the storm, you know, so to speak, and yet their structures were still up. And they looked beyond, you know, obviously, you know, trees down around them, but they had been rebuilt with better building code requirements. And those were the properties that actually fared better. So it really is going to be about how we leverage our private markets and the surplus lines market, educate, no doubt, all of these policyholders from residential to commercial and into the risk management community to make sure that they know they have options and that there is capacity out there.
Yeah, and for me, I think, you know, we've seen a lot of disruptions in technology, and we need to continue to drive that innovation in our market, but in the insurance market as a whole. I think whoever, you know, comes up with the ability to allow policyholders to procure that insurance as simply as possible and have that accessibility where they can really understand the nomenclature, the terminology, that insurance speak. They can go in and understand how they need to modify their policies so that those perils are insured against. You know, we used to have all risk policies, especially in the homeowners market, where no matter what peril struck, if it was fire, lightning, flood, you name it, it was covered. Now we've had so many exceptions to that that it's just too difficult for the average policyholder to know whether something is excluded or not. And so it really boils down to being able to put the control back in the hands of the policyholder to make those decisions for themselves and to let them have it through a technology platform that's clear and easy to understand.
My guests today have been Norma Estrey, the CEO of Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas, and Tara Mitchell, the CIO of Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas. Norma and Tara, first of all, thank you for a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. This was enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to make sure that if people, you know, want to reach out and they want to learn more, especially I'm sure there's lots of people listening that, you know, in Texas, how can people learn more about you and contact you?
Thank you. We have just created a whole new website, sltx.org. Our job is to provide all of our business partners with meaningful data, analysis, and educational resources to empower those decisions, while at the same time facilitating compliance for any of the Texas licensed surplus lines agents and insurers. We provide the financial analysis. We make sure that things are managed well and that our agents are supplying their information correctly to us. Again, it's really about being a data warehouse and an information supporter. And anything that we can provide to the marketplace, we're certainly open for that.
Norma and Tara, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your words of wisdom.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
Direct your podcast questions to iask@soyteam.com. Share this podcast with your friends and remember to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.